Welcome to this week's edition of the Video News Endscreen Media Podcast. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon from Endscreen Media joins me. Hey, Colin, how are you?
I'm doing very well, Will. Been an interesting week in our business this week. Lots of announcements by a variety of companies on a variety of topics, including a big announcement by DirecTV about, or at least AT&T about DirecTV Now. And I think that's where we're going to start the discussion, but we're going to throw in a couple of other topics as well. So why don't you tell us about what they said?
Yeah, so you and I have both been following this so-called virtual pay TV or VMVPD or skinny bundle, whatever moniker you want to use for this category of bundled networks that has emerged over these past few years. And DirecTV Now has been one of the leaders, if not the leader in the category, up until the past really sort of 5 or 6 months when AT&T had a change in strategy in terms of pulling back on some of the promotions of DirecTV Now. And that led in Q4 2018 to a drop in the number of DirecTV Now subscribers versus a pretty big gain in Q4 of 2017. And now, as the AT&T Time Warner deal has officially closed, we see the next step in the evolution of how AT&T is looking at DirecTV Now. And that emerged earlier this week as DirecTV Now essentially changed up the packaging strategy for its networks, and also the pricing strategy. So it moved from having essentially four different tiers of DirecTV Now service offers to now having just two service tiers. One is called DirecTV Now Plus and one is called DirecTV Now Max. They're grandfathering in prior subscribers at the prior tiers, but with a $10 per month rate increase. And the big change on the new tiers is that they are including HBO in them, and actually in the upper tier, the max tier, they're including Cinemax as well. And in addition to that, the change is that quite a number of highly rated ad-supported TV networks are being dropped. So that's a lot to digest, but the net of it to me, as I looked at it, was that in a sense, DirecTV Now, the two new packages, return HBO to what I called its workhorse role in pulling along other ad-supported TV networks. And this is a role that HBO was actually in 40 years ago at sort of the inception of what we now know as the multi-channel bundle, cable TV, in its infancy. And HBO is now kind of returning to that role. So HBO has been available standalone as HBO Now for several years and has been priced at $15 per month. It's been among the higher priced standalone services out there, especially as we've seen pricing on Netflix and Amazon and Hulu substantially below. So if you think about the new $50 per month price point for the DirecTV Now Plus package, and you deducted the $15 per month that HBO would be valued at, you're essentially paying $35 a month for a package of channels that no longer includes 10 of the 25 most watched networks in 2018. Those are primarily networks from Discovery, Viacom, and AMC. And you're left still with the four broadcasters. So you still get your locals. You get Disney's primary channels, ESPN, et cetera. You get a bunch of the Fox networks, which are important also, very popular, but you lose, as I say, 10 of the top 25, but you pick up HBO. So it's really a package of channels that would appeal, I think, to HBO loyalists and probably to people who spend a lot of time with broadcast and or the Disney channels and or the Fox networks, but probably lose a whole bunch of people on the other end. So it's sort of a new, very new approach by DirecTV Now, and certainly a new approach in the virtual pay TV world as well.
It is, Will. And you know, this is actually something that I thought was going to happen with virtual MVPDs, which actually hasn't really happened yet, but now is. And that is that I thought that they would become more niching, that individual virtual MVPDs providers would actually go after very specific segments of the market instead of going with this scattershot approach of trying to be all things to all men, which has been pay television's traditional approach. And that certainly, when you look at the plus and the max, it certainly seems to be that way. That's what AT&T is trying to do now with that virtual MVPD. And that's obviously going to have a big effect. The first effect is it's going to be interesting to a much smaller pool of people. And inevitably, that means that they're gone. The days of them signing up huge numbers of people on a quarterly basis is probably over. Although they will be making hopefully progress in the niches that they think that this specifically appeals to. So, you know, the big difference between the plus and the max, as you say, is Cinemax and a bunch of sports networks and regional sports networks. So the Max Pack, I think, is probably badly titled. They should have called it plus sports or something, because it really, the big difference is it just adds in all the sports. And it is really surprising to see so many popular networks drop out. But as we were talking before we got going, and we started talking about all of the channels that have been dropped, I know I personally can't remember the last time I watched any of them, with the possible exception of Home and Garden TV, which we do like a lot of the shows on Home and Garden TV. But you know, Wall Street has really punished these guys. The Discovery, AMC, they've really fallen pretty heavily because they've been dropped out of, primarily because of they've been dropped out of the DirecTV packages. And so there was news that the stocks of Discovery, AMC, Viacom are all down 3-4% today. You know, I think this is maybe a bit of an overreaction for this specific incident with DirecTV dropping them out, because let's be clear, DirecTV Now doesn't even have 2 million subscribers yet. It's not a huge impact to these networks going forward. I guess you could say the long-term prognostication for this is not good for them, right, Will? Because, you know, this is probably an indication that AT&T was looking at how much those channels were really being watched and couldn't justify an even bigger increase in price than $10 for them to stay in the package, that they didn't think it would be compelling for people to stick around, right?
Yeah, well, I think it also reflects how the pieces are being rearranged on the chessboard. You have AT&T now owning HBO by virtue of the Time Warner acquisition. And so AT&T in a position to use HBO in different ways maybe than it's been used before. Obviously, AT&T can choose to figure out how it wants to compensate HBO in any way it wants to for every new subscriber that HBO gets as part of the DirecTV Now Plus and Max packages. So it has internal pricing flexibility that wasn't there in the past when it didn't own HBO. So that's one thing that changes. The other thing I think that changes is that these companies like Viacom, Discovery, AMC are now smaller players in a bigger game that's going on, where Disney is owning Fox and AT&T is owning Time Warner, and Comcast, of course, owns NBC Universal. It's a different level of scale and negotiating that leverage that's now happening in the industry. And I think you and I have talked many times in the past about how these virtual pay TV bundles that were originally priced at $30 or $35 or $40 were marginally profitable, if profitable at all. And that the day was going to come, and it was already happening as we saw price increases on even YouTube TV and Hulu, not to mention DirecTV Now and you know others, that there was a reckoning coming, that they couldn't just continue to afford to lose money like this. And so that reckoning, I think, now continues in the way that AT&T has reconfigured what's included in the DirecTV Now packages. And I think to your point, you're absolutely right that it sort of reduces the appeal for people for whom these networks that are now dropped was still compelling. On the other hand, it brings in a whole bunch of people that might be interested in HBO and gets them into this, potentially now into this DirecTV, now the two new packages. So I think these moves reflect a lot of sort of movement of the chess pieces, if you will.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a subscriber. I signed up for the original offer when it was first launched, which was $35 for 105 plus channels. And they bumped that to $40. And now this $10 increase pushes it up to $50. I still don't think they're making much money off of me. But, you know, I haven't run the numbers on these in detail, Will. But I got a feeling that these are profitable. I'm sure they have done their sums right. And that what they have here is packages that give them reasonable margins. And, you know, it'd be interesting to see what happens when they have to renegotiate contracts and how much prices go up based on what Disney demands for ESPN and the RSNs and all of that. But I do note that one in the Max pack, one of the channels that's included is the YES Network. And I know that the YES Network has been one of those networks that's been very contentious out there in negotiations. So anyway, I think they're making money on Plus and Max. I should probably run the numbers and check that for sure. But as I say, I think it will be a lot less appealing to many people and possibly a lot more appealing to a much smaller number of people. So it'll be interesting to see when they talk about how many subscribers DirecTV Now has, what happens with these changes. And I got a feeling that subscriber growth will slow dramatically. And I think we have another bloodletting coming where a bunch of other people decide that it's time to leave.
Well, that I think is really the next question is, in a way, I think this really moves Hulu Live and YouTube, Hulu Live TV and YouTube TV up to the front of the pack in terms of, sort of maintaining the, let's say, the true or the original value proposition that the virtual pay TV operators were putting forth into the market. Now, both the price on both of those has increased by $5 a month. They're both now at $40. And still, I think both of those services are very strong values for what they are. They're different, sort of different value propositions. Hulu, of course, includes access to the massive SVOD library. And on YouTube TV, you don't get the massive SVOD library, but you get this unlimited DVR feature and the multi-user capability, both of which are really nice to have as you know, alternatively. So there have been reports that both of those services combined have about 3 million subscribers. Not exactly clear how to cut them. Some have analysts have Hulu at 2 million, YouTube at 1 million. Others have Hulu at 1.7, YouTube at 1.3. It's hard to know what the exact numbers are. Hulu has periodically announced what they have for Hulu Live subscribers. They haven't done so recently. YouTube, of course, has never said anything about what they have for YouTube TV subscribers. But I do think that the net of this move by DirecTV Now is that it does move Hulu Live and YouTube TV to the front of the pack. Do you agree with that? Or?
Yeah, I absolutely will. I really do. And I will say that in particular with Hulu, they've made some changes in their bundle as well. They've dropped some channels out, and I'm struggling to remember which ones, which they moved to another tier, which you have to pay more to get now. So the only one that hasn't changed its original proposition is YouTube TV. That's, I think, remains a really excellent value if what you're looking for is a pay television replacement and it has the channels that you want. And of course, it has most of the locals there. I think with the unlimited DVR and the really great simple interface, it still probably remains the best value if you're looking for a massive number of channels. You know, Sling TV at $25 is still pretty interesting if you want to just, there's a couple of channels you're interested in and they've got them. But yeah, I think you're right. I think those two services are the leaders now.
Well, let's transition to our next topic then, Colin. I know you followed some commentary from a Netflix executive who was speaking at a conference this week and had some agreement, some disagreement, based on your analysis of a couple of her statements that you wanted to share with us.
Yeah, she said some very interesting things. This was Cindy Holland. She is Netflix's VP of Original Content, and she was speaking at the INTV conference in Jerusalem this week. And she said a couple of things that really caught my eye. The first thing was, and this is something that I've heard repeated as a mantra from Netflix, and she said there's plenty of room for everyone to be successful. And I think that this is only somewhat correct. And the reason, and I'm sure many of our listeners are aware of what's going on, the reason for this is that there is very definitely a limit to the number of services that consumers will pay for. For most consumers, they aren't at that limit yet, because I think it's probably in the range of 3 to 6 from 3 to 6 services. And remember, most people are still carrying pay television as well, so that probably counts a lot in there. And what we are seeing is that more people now are signing up for more services. So I pulled some TiVo data, and TiVo said that the number of services, the average number of TV services people had in 2018 was 2.2, and it's increased 26% to 2.8 in 2018. So that's a big increase. So I think that in some respects, it is true to say that somebody that takes a Disney Plus service isn't necessarily going to cancel Netflix right away. But that's, in the longer run, that is not true. I think very definitely we will have a set of services that we like, and if we want to take another one, we're going to look very closely at how we're using the ones that we have. And a win for Disney Plus could well mean a loss for Netflix or somebody else who's on somebody's roster. So I think that dynamic is going to become increasingly important, but maybe we're a couple of years away from that. What do you think?
Yeah, I was going to say, let's pause on that one for a second. You know, I think that to some extent, trees don't grow to the sky. People don't have unlimited budgets to subscribe to whatever video service strikes their fancy. So there is some crowding that occurs at some point. But I think when you say a couple of years, that may well be on the low end, because one dynamic that is going to be playing out here is that as people either don't subscribe to pay TV or cut the cord, they essentially free up a fair amount of monthly budget that they were spending on video services. And, you know, if you could take your multi-channel bundled price from, let's just say, $200 a month to pick a number, and cut that in half to $100 a month, because maybe you cut out your landline, you cut out the big multi-channel bundle, you picked up a $40 or $50 skinny bundle subscription, et cetera, you know, you've created, say, $50 more, $100 more in room for yourself per month just to stay even before you're even spending more. And I think that supports the notion that, you know, there will be plenty of people that will carry multiple subscription services, whether that's Netflix or Disney Plus or Warner Media or Hulu or, you know, who knows what. So I think there's still some room in a market that's very much in flux right now. And we, you know, of course, we know that Netflix has for ages talked about there being plenty of room for everybody. Reed Hastings' favorite comments that he used to make was that people don't own a bicycle or a car, they own both. And I think that's still very much the, as you say, the Netflix mantra.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, long term, we're not there yet, but we will get there, I'm pretty sure. But anyway, I wanted to just mention one other thing that she said. I actually covered four things, but I think we'll just cover one more, Will. And she said that the average Netflix user watches 2 hours a day. And here, I'm pretty sure that she misspoke. I think what she actually meant was Netflix subscriber. And here's why. I sort of went back and looked at what was going on the last time Netflix made a clear statement about how much they were streaming. And that was back at the beginning of 2018. And they said that they were streaming about 140 million hours of content on an average day. And at the time, they had 118 million subscribers, and that's paid and free. So when you crunch the numbers, you get 1 hour and 11 minutes per day per paid subscription. But we know that people share these subscriptions within families. So, you know, in the US, there are about 2.5 residents per household, and in higher subscriber countries for Netflix, that's Europe primarily, Canada, it's something like that as well. So what that really means is people, individual users, Netflix users, are probably watching 35 to 45 minutes per day. So I'm pretty sure that in a year, we haven't 3x'd the amount people are watching. If you take it that it's actually 2 hours per day per subscription, that's probably more realistic. Maybe it's a tad less than that, but that's, I think it's probably in that region. So anyway, if you look at what Roku says, Roku says that people are streaming now about 3 hours a day through the Roku box. And we do know that a lot of that is Netflix consumption. But remember, there's a lot of pay TV, TV Everywhere apps on those, and most people still have pay TV, so they could be using those. And you know, HBO Now fans, they certainly like to watch a lot. So, you know, I think a more realistic statement is 2 hours per day per subscription, not per Netflix user.
Colin, I love the watchdog role that you're playing here.
Well, the funny thing,
the keeping them honest segment of the podcast.
Yeah, the keeping them honest. Well, the thing is, we're banned at a, we see a lot of data, Will. And just when I see something that strikes me as not quite right, well, hopefully it's fun for people to read my analysis and see if they agree or not agree. But anyway, that's where I think we are with that.
Well, I know I appreciate it. So thanks for keeping me up to date. And we, as you just said, there are lots of things that are said that float around at conferences, et cetera. People sometimes get misquoted or they don't quite say the word exactly, and then it gets carried as a narrative forward all around.
Yeah, funny thing was with this, Will, I noted somebody had taken what she said literally. Yeah. And wrote a piece talking about, you know, assuming that that is a fact, and went on from there. And as I say, I think she misspoke. I think she meant Netflix subscriber. But anyway.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, again, congrats on the watchdog role.
And thank you.
I think that's all we have for this week. So, Colin, we'll chat again next week. And thanks, everybody, for listening in on our video news end screen media podcast this week. And we'll see you all again next week.